One is that the Rebbe in the parsha that you have in front of you, Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Haran, Vayitka Bamoko. So Chazal learned out from that second pasuk, Vayitka. Rashi actually quotes it. It's a Gemara in Brachos that Yaakov, as you know, was misaken one of the filos. Which filo was Yaakov misaken? Ma'ariv, Arvit. And Chazal derived from this word Vayivka. Rashi on the bottom of the page indicates that. Three lines from the bottom, you can see Rashi. Rabbi Sema Pir Shalosh and Tfila Kamo Vyaltivka Bi Laman Shetikin Filas Arvis. And as you also know, there are two other tfilos, namely Mincha and Shacharis. Who was the second tfilah of Shacharis? Avraham Avinu. And the tfilah of Mincha was Nisgan by Yitzhak Avinu. And again, with reference to those two, namely Avraham and Yitzhak, so Chazal also derived it from a particular word. One particular word, the Gemara says in Brachas, in the fourth parak, by Avraham Avinu, El Amokam Asher Omad Shom, Ein Amida El Tfilah. That the word Amida, which means to stand, which is generally the posture that we assume when we are davening Shemoneh Esrei. So the language of Amida that refers to Shemoneh Esrei is the language that's used by the Gemara in Brachas in the context of Avraham Avinu davening Shacharis. What about Yitzchak? At the end of Chayisara, the Torah said, "Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basodeh." If you remember, lasuach says Chazal ein sicha elo tfila. So that also, the term sicha refers to tefillah, that's a tefillah of mincha, and Yitzchak was misaken. So we have in effect three tefillos, and Chazal find the reference to all these three tefillos in the use of one word in each case. In the case of Avraham Avinu, language of Amida. In the case of Yitzchak, language of sicha, which means conversation. In the case of Yaakov over here, the language of Ayivka. One was misaken Shacharis, Avraham Avinu, Yitzchak misaken mincha, and Yaakov Tfilas Ma'ariv. My Rabbi used to comment that these three words are very significant because they're not just three words that describe three different philos, but in many respects they really describe the three personalities associated with these three philos. Avraham Avinu, as you undoubtedly are aware, was the one who discovered Hashem Yisbarach. He was actually engaged on a mission to discover the Almighty, a mission that lasted many, many years till he finally came to a concrete conclusion. He was someone that the Gemara says and Chazal say, he's on one side of the world, so to speak, and the entire world is essentially not in sync with his thinking. He's monotheistic, discovered the idea of one God. Clearly he's living in a world of idolaters, of pagans, saturated with all kinds of idols and what have you, a multiplicity of idols and the like. So the language of Amida implies a certain firmness, a certain perseverance, standing his ground despite all the difficulties. And as Rashi quotes the Chazal I just mentioned, he created a front. Everyone's on one side. And the greatness of Avraham Avinu was that he, shall we say, was ready to go out and battle the entire world. That's what he did. So that's the language of Amida. Amida implies a tenacity, a doggedness. That's the language of Avraham Avinu. With Yitzchak, the language that the Torah uses, it's the language of Sicha. Yitzchak, as you know, is considered to be an Ola Tzvima. Rashi quotes it. He's a Korban. He can never leave Eretz Yisrael. Even when the famine occurred and he wanted to do similar to what his father did, leaving Eretz Yisrael, namely going down to Mitzrayim, Hashem told him, no, Shom Baretz Asher Amar Elecha, you're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael, Gur Baretz Azos, Vayem Chav Avarachecha. So the language of Sicha, generally speaking, refers to intimate conversation. And Yitzchak actually is a very cryptic personality. To such an extent, I would say he's even mysterious. There's very little that we know about him. The Torah does not record many events, many incidents, or even a lot of dialogue that we have. You see, Yitzchak, let's say, and Rivka, there are only two dialogues the Torah records, Mashen King, Yaakov and his wives, and Avraham Avinu and Sarah. No shortage of, shall we say, interaction, interplay between the two. Yitzchak, the term Sicha implies, as Chazal say, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Pasodeh, in the field he goes out to speak to Hashem, as it were, Bihisbodudus, he's in isolation, He has a dialogue with Hashem, and it's something which is of a very private nature. That's the language of Sikha. And there are many rise to this from Gemaras and Midrashi Chazal. However, the third personality, Yaakov Avinu, the term the Torah uses is the what term? Vayivka. How would you translate this pasuk literally? Vayivka b'makom. He bumped into the place. That's how I would translate it. And anyone who knows anything about Yaakov Avinu will notice obviously that his life was a life of constant skirmishing. Yaakov Avinu was the one who was involved with many, many, how should we call them, colorful, swashbuckling, romantic personalities. Yaakov and Lavan, Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov and the Sarshal Esav, and on and on and on. So the term Vayivka, the implication of that is that the life of Yaakov Avinu was one that was fraught with turmoil. More so than Avram Avinu, he represents Amida, someone who discovered Hashem from the symmetry of nature. More so than Yitzhak is a very private kind of individual who's basically operating in solitude. He's a carbon and all tzmima, and Yaakov is the one who's out there, as it were, Vayivka b'mokom, bumping into the place. So I heard from my Rebbe, Rav Nissen Alpazer, Chassadu Dibracha, the following beautiful interpretation of the psukim in the beginning of this week's Parsha Vayetze. And I think it has a lot of relevance to Jews throughout the millennia. I don't think anything has changed. The Torah says, Vayetze Yaakov miber shava vayelech harana. Now notice carefully, if you read the psukim, you have to read the text and be sensitive to the text. I'll read the psukim and then you'll see what I mean in a moment. Vayetze Yaakov miber shava vayelech harana. Vayitka v'amokam vayolen shom kivu ha-shemesh. Vayikach miyav miyamokam vayosem v'ashosa vayishka v'amokam avu. He takes stones in order to serve as a kind of pillow. And then he laid down to sleep. Vayachalom, and then he had the dream. In a sula mutzavarza, roshem magia shamayma. There's a ladder, and of course is the base of the ladder is here, but the head of the ladder is in heaven. V'nei malachei Elokim olim v'yodim v'onen. Hashem appears to him, and Hashem actually gives him a very well-known haftacha. Hashem promises him that you'll have children. Let me just finish the point. I will guard you, I'm going to accompany you. Don't worry, Yaakov Avinu, that you have to leave Eretz Yisrael, Be'er Sheva, and you're going to Haran. I will be with you, I'll accompany you, and I'm going to return you to Eretz Yisrael. So my Rebbe suggested there are a lot of verbs here. Vayetze, vayelech, next pasuk. Vayivka, vayolen, vayikach, vayosem, vayishka, and then vayachalom. Whenever you have, in a very short span of time, many, many verbs, in a staccato kind of fashion, so there is a certain picture the Torah is trying to create. If you know Midrashim, I will just fill in a little bit with Midrashi Chazal, what exactly the picture the Chazal see here. Yaakov Avinu is compelled to flee. Whom is he running from, of course? From Esav. In fact, the Haftarah you probably are familiar with. Vayivrach Yaakov stay aram. Yaakov runs. I didn't forget you yet. Vayivrach Yaakov stay aram. Just 1 second. Okay. Now Yaakov is forced to flee as a fugitive, and he's leaving in the prime of his life. Vayelech Harana. Haran represents, as the Medrash says, Charonav Shalmakom. Who lives in Haran? All kinds of sleazy types. Full of avarice and greed. Individuals who are, shall we say, leave a lot to be desired. Low lives, as you would call them. Charon is Charon Avshal Mokom, the anger of Hashem. And then we continue. He leaves the Mokom Kadosh, he leaves his parents in the best years of his life. He goes to Charon, he's unknown, he's unappreciated. Vayivka b'mokom, he bumped into the place, the Chazal say. The world was like a wall to him. Vayolan Shom Kivu HaShemesh, the sun set before its time. Also Medrash. Kivu HaShemesh, suddenly the sun set. He's forced to stay there. And as Rashi comments, it's a Mokom Sakona. Chayos and Listin, surrounded by all types of wild animals and who knows what, ravaging beasts. And Yaakov has no protection except for Avnei HaMokom. How shall I put it? cold, clammy stones. You know, the Ramban in Zakhdama Tiberesha speaks about, he divides the world into four different types. There's domain, inorganic matter, someach, organic matter, chai, animal kingdom, midaber, mutakalimun, as the Rambam called the word of Vuchim. Mutakalimun refers to midabrim. Ba'i adam, nefesh chaya, the ruach nemalala, the ability of a man, we have logos. With our logos, we have the ability to think, to express ourselves, to articulate ideas. Yaakov is left with what kind of protection? Avonim, which is basically domain, the lowest of all the classes that I just mentioned in the Ramban. By Yishka, by Makom Ahu, Yaakov thought, it's all over for him. He's going to die. Suddenly the Torah says, Vayachalom, he has a dream. One would think, what would he dream of? He would dream of any one of a number of people who essentially represent his nemesis, whether it's Esav, Eliphaz, Lavan, all the different shady characters, shall we say, who was going to confront. No! What does Yaakov have a dream? Sula Mutzav Arza, a ladder, going up to Shamayim, Malachim, ascending and descending, and suddenly Hashem appears to him with a very beautiful and dramatic haptacha that I'm going to protect you, you're going to come back to Eretz Israel, even though you're leaving in the best years of your life, don't worry Yaakov Avinu, I'll take care of you, v'chulu v'chulu. Chazal say that Yaakov Avinu is the prototype of a Jew in Golos. He is the Golos Jew par excellence. And what is the reality of a Jew in Golos? Rejection, trouble, tzaras, forlornness, desolation, and let me just finish my point, and the like, upon leaving Eretz Yisrael, our hopes and aspirations died, we have no protection, we're exposed to the elements, we're exposed to the, shall we say, the ravaging beasts, and I'm not only talking about those, shall we say, that walk on four, but even those that walk on two. So what saved us? What protected us? The dream! The chalom! We're on the ground, we're standing on terra firma, but in our hearts and mind's eye, where are we? V'rosha magia shamayma. We're in the Beis HaMikdash, we're in Yerushalayim HaKodesh, we're being makriv karbonos, we're offering up sacrifices, we're learning kachin, we're learning taros. We see the Beis HaMikdash being rebuilt right in front of us. Chazal say, Beis HaMikdash Shomata, Gemara in Tainus, Mechuvah Kedei Beis HaMikdash Shomala. One corresponds to the other. Yushalayim Shomata, Yushalayim Shomala. So we have dreams, and those dreams are essentially that which kept us alive throughout the long night of Golus. Yeah?
Obviously not meant to take literally, but don't we say that Gemara and Suvis, that someone who lives in Chuzarz is like someone who doesn't have a God? But this is saying specifically, so Yaakov, who's leaving Chuzarz, specifically that Hashem will be in God.
This is not a raya against that Gemara at all. The Gemara says that kol ha'dor v'chutzaretz ki'ilu ein lo'elka. Obviously, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere, up, down, all around. Anyway, clearly Hashem is universal. Obviously, he's both omnipresent.
In this story, it makes it seem like Hashem's specifically saying, Yaakov, I'll be with you extra.
No, not necessarily. You don't have to assume that extra. I'm not sure where you see that. The pasuk just tells us that Hashem is not going to abandon Yaakov Avinu. I am the God of Avram Avicha, the God of Yitzhak, and essentially Hashem promises him Eretz Yisrael, as he promised all the others. The bris for the others relates to Eretz Yisrael. But Hashem tells him afterwards, something you don't have in front of you, that Bahaya Zahacha Kapha Aretz. And then Ufarasa Yamav Kedma, and then Vinyan Ochima, Hushmatiru Halashatele, Vashivosir Adam Azos, Kiloe Azovcha, Arashem Asisa, Sashedi Badila. So I don't think it's at all a contradiction to that Gemara, the Vyan is dieting, but I hear what troubles you. But I'm saying the Gemara says, Kiyu, Kimisha Meloka, not that God does not exist. The Chutzars, we happen to be very influenced by the Ramban Shita. But because you happen to know the Ramban, and you happen to be familiar with the Ramban position that somehow, which is, by the way, a very unique position, not everyone agrees with the Ramban, as you know. Namely, Ramban is of the opinion that in Chutz Aretz, there is no direct Hashkocha of Hashem Yisbarach. It's all through intermediaries, through satraps, through mediation, through all kinds of, shall we say, intermediaries who in effect interact with the people, and then they interact with Hashem, and Eretz Yisrael is a direct hashgacha. I don't think that this indicates necessarily otherwise, but just Hashem is still going to be the Hatsiyat
Nishmai. Yeah? Two questions. I guess first of all, secondary question is when you see Ba'al Chalom, that Hashem comes to Yaakov through a dream, I think it's the first time that Hashem comes to him, first of all. Is that relevant that Hashem has gone to Abraham and almost speaks to him directly?
In general, the Mirushana point out that as you know well, there's a distinction between even the Avos and Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is the only one who is in direct contact, direct communication with Hashem Yisbarach. That's really one of the Yisodi Adas, that the Nevuah Moshe Rabbeinu is unique and sweet, generous, par excellence. There's nothing comparable to it. Pe'al pe'a dabebo ma'avilo b'chidos aspaklayam ira, as we mentioned on Shabbos. Masha'en came in the Nevuah, but the Avos is all through Chalomos and all through Mishalim. Now, even though the Torah sometimes says Vayachlam, sometimes not, but there's no question that the Nevuah of the Avos is markedly different than that of Moshe Rabbeinu.
Yeah, and the second question, does Rosh Hashim mean that he's in Galus in the sense that he's left his home and now he's in Galus? Because we know from Rashi that this is going to Israel. It's not that this is...
No. Vayetzi Yaakov Be'er El Charana, he's on his way to Charan. You're referring to Rashi in the Makom HaMikdash, all that. But I mean, he's on his way, he's going to Golos, that's for sure. He's leaving Eretz Yisrael.
He's still in Eretz Yisrael. So
okay, at this point. But the fact is that he's headed for Charan, which is not Eretz Yisrael. Charan is outside of Eretz Yisrael. Be'er Sheva is in Eretz Yisrael. The Torah actually stresses in Be'er Sheva, which is Eretz Yisrael, and he's leaving Eretz Yisrael. Leaving Eretz Yisrael, by the way, is no simple matter. To go to Mas Eretz Amin, my brother Shlita came to Eretz Yisrael 45 years ago, has never left Eretz Yisrael. Will never leave Eretz Yisrael. Not completely true, as we noted. But he did not leave Eretz Yisrael, basically, because Tumas Eretz Amin. That's right. That's why I had a kasha. But going into the Chutz Laaretz is certainly an act of golf. Okay, that's not, all this by way of Akdama, what I want to talk about. Yeah?
Sure, can we say that Har Moriah wasn't really Israel until David built
this needs a separate attention. You're both referring to, that's what Rashi comments on Ramban, is one of the most difficult series of psukim over here. I can't comment on it right now, it needs a separate attention. You're saying Gomorrah, what you're saying also, both of you, what you're saying has certainly tremendous value. I'm not dealing with it right now because I want to focus on something else at the end of the parasha. And I want to share with you something I heard also from one of my rabbeim, Haratzi Dov Keletapsky, the Chassad Zidracha, a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, something which is, according to my humble opinion, absolutely mind-boggling. What I heard from my rabbeim is always mind-boggling. At the end of the parasha, which is again the other set of sheets that you have, starting at the end of the Vayetzei, I just want to read a series of psukim and then try to come to grips with in a very simple way. At the end of the parasha, as you know, Yaakov and Laban each go their own merry way. But there's a dialogue that takes place between them. I'm not reading the entire dialogue, I'm only reading from Shri, from Perek Lamedal of Pasuk Mem Gimel. You see where it says, Vayan Laban, Vayomer El Yaakov. Laban gives Yaakov a Musa Shmuz, Sichad Musar. He tells him, Abanos Menosai, Abanim Banai, Batson Tomi. Laban is a very possessive kind of guy, if you know him. He's a Shylock, he's venal, he's greedy, he's full of avarice, and he's very possessive. He thinks that he essentially is kingpin number one, numero uno, and everything that Yaakov acquired, obviously, is from him. I'm starting with Pasuk Mem Dal, that's what I'm interested in. So he tells Yaakov, you have the text? Could I just see it inside? Let's go ahead and consummate a pact. Now, generally, as you know, in Tanakh, there are many different types of pacts that people have with each other and consummate. For example, where else do we find a bris many times? Such as, give me an example. Bris ben Absalom, excellent. Between who and whom? Right, correct. And where else do we have a bris? Avimelech, correct, also. Torah says, called it a bris. Where else do we have a bris? Many, many times. I mean, you could, little tens and tens of britot that the Torah describes. Yes, where else?
Is Abraham a part of bris, or is it just a transaction?
No, that's not a bris. That was a pure transaction, a commercial transaction to sell the Maaseh Machpelah. Yes, where else? The Tzad mentioned the idea of prayer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Isn't that to do with Bilam?
What about it?
And how, not even a bris, but like,
it's not a bris. Where else do we have a bris?
It's a bris.
What? The bris in terms of the keshet you're talking about. Excellent. Very good. Yeah, I mean, just all of Torah, all of Tanakh, all over the place. Namely, what happens over there? Correct. Brisi Shalom, excellent. Maimon Hasina is the bris. There are many, many, many different examples of brisin that take place in the Torah. So here we have a bris that's going to take place between Lavan and Yaakov. Let's take a look at the bris. Vayikach Yaakov Lavan. So what does Yaakov do? I just want to read the psukim. Vayirmeh Matzeva. Yaakov goes ahead and takes a stone and puts it up as a kind of monument. Vayom Yaakov Lecha Liktu Avonim. Go and collect stones. Vayikach Avonim. Vayasugo. What do they make? A gal is a pile of stones. Vayokusham Alagal. They eat there. And then we have the following pasuk, which is very, very fascinating. Yaakov calls it by one name. By the way, notice the Aramaic use, the Aramaic term. It's Gemara Megillah. I assume you may be familiar with it. Laban calls it Yigarsa Adusa, and Yaakov calls it Galay. Why does each one give the particular area a different name? That needs a bit of, shall we say, inquiry. I continue. Laban said that this gal, this pile of stones, will be a witness between you and me. Al ken karashimo galay, therefore he calls it galay. And then it continues. The amitva sheama yitzev Hashem ben yu menecha ki nisasa Yishmael im tani as bona benosa. He gives him a continuing musash moves. If you afflict my daughters, im tikach nashim al benosa, if you take other women, other wives, other than my daughters who are married to you, eh nishimon reido ki mei ben yu menecha, that Hashem should be a witness. Vayom alav on the Yaakov, vinei agal hazeh, vinei amatzev ashi yarisi ben yu menecha. Next page. Eid Agal is there. Laban tells Yaakov, this gal should be a witness. Eid Amatseva imani. Lo ever elechas Agal is there. I won't, shall we say, violate this bris. Yimata lo saber elechas Agal is there. It's Amatseva azol sirah. A long mitzvah shmuz that Laban gives to Yaakov. And then we have Pasuk Nun Gimel, which is also another line of demarcation between Laban and Yaakov. What does Laban do? He swears. In the name of whom? Elohei Abraham. Elohei Nochor Yishpatu Benenu Elohei Abiyam. Who does he swear? In the name of the God of Abraham, the God of Nochor, the God of their father. Who are we talking about? Who's the God of their father, Abraham and Nochor? Terach. And what does Yaakov do? He ignores the Shavua of Laban. And what does he do? Vayishava Yaakov. The Fakad of Yitzchak. Why does Yaakov take a different shua than Laban? Laban swears in the name of Terach, essentially, and Yaakov's shua is in the name of his father, Pachad of Yitzchak. By the way, this expression is really very striking. You know about Yitzchak a little bit, but not a lot, probably, but a little bit you know about Yitzchak, know that, as I mentioned earlier, he's an Olat Tzmimah, he's a Karban, he's a very mysterious figure. Torah doesn't record much about him. Yitzchak is known al-Pi'ab Kabbalah, for the midah of his kasus, hiddenness. He's not... His personality is not revealed much at all. Yeah, what do you want to say?
Didn't
who?
Terach.
To say that. I'm not in any way taking away from the tshuva of Terach, but it could very well be that when Lavan invoked his shvua he was talking about before, he went ahead and did tshuva. That's the impression one has from the pasuk, but I understand what you're saying. I'm not... detracting from what Chazal said, what you mentioned. Yeah. Chazal, what's it? Chazal derived from the pasuk, "Viata tavar la v'secha b'sholom tikaver b'seva tavar." Says Rashi, "Malamid sheterach hasat shuvah." Yeah.
It says Lavan called the gal the Aramaic word, and then it says the next pasuk that he called the galay.
No. He said that Yaakov called the galay, and then what does the pasuk say again? A gal is a, but it doesn't say that. The term Galay that's used by Yaakov is not the term that's used by Laban at all. It says Yaakov calls it Galay, and then Laban says, okay, this gal is an A, he's obviously responding to Yaakov's terminology, I'm asking to you. But still, the name he gave it is something striking, needs attention. Why does he call it by the Aramaic, Yigar Sadusa? Why that particular term? By the way, the word Yigar Sadusa means, what does it mean? So the word Sadusa is an Aramaic term meaning Edus, meaning testimony. So essentially, it's a translation of that which Yaakov called it, namely he calls it Galay, a stone which will testify, and he calls it also something of a similar nature. What?
They're not disagreeing. They're not like calling something.
I'm going to show you otherwise in a second. But I just want to just continue on this vein. In the next pasuk, Nun Dalid, it says, "Vayizbach Yaakov Zerach Bahor." Very fascinating. This is the first time that the Torah mentions the idea of Shchitas Chulin. The idea of Shchit is not mentioned any time till this pasuk. The Gemara actually has a derivation. This is not my chiddush. The Meshech Chachma says in the Perush of HaTorah, "Vayizbach Yaakov Zerach Bahor." He said the word Zerach means "B'makom Shezov." That means the place where the blood gushes and flows, that's where you should do the incision. Then where do they do the incision? When they do shchita? By the two simanim. The two simanim are the kon and the veshet, correct? The esophagus, the food pipe, and the windpipe, the trachea. That's where the shchita is done. So the Torah mentions the shchita skulin. Why? The shchita skulin suddenly mentioned over here. Why is it necessary to tell us the idea of shchita skulin? Why is it dafka found over here? And then the Torah said at the end, "Vayashkelon baboker, vaynashik levanav levdonsav." He becomes very, shall we say, cuddly-like Lavan. He's not a cuddly-like kind of character, but of course these are his children. He kisses them. Vayelach vayashkelon b'mukama v'yalach Yaakov halach l'darko v'yitku ba malachei elokim v'yom Yaakov v'sharam machli elokimzeh. So my Rebbe, Rav Tzidkel Kanatapsky Zatzal, he had many more diukim, but I don't have the time to go into all the diukim that he made over here in his tukim. But he came to the following, I think, rather startling and rather significant kind of conclusion. In general, as I said in Tanakh, all the different brisim that we encounter, a bris has one or two functions. Either a bris has, for example, you mentioned some of the brisim before. Let's start with the one that you mentioned. The bris of Abimelech and Avram. What was the nature of that bris? How would you define the nature of that bris? What was the object of that bris? What was the function of it?
Peace.
Essentially, what?
Peace.
A kind of peace treaty, okay? Like Lahavdil. The Indians, when they make a peace treaty, maybe they share some wampum. But whatever the case is, there's a peace treaty that takes place. But essentially, you go your way, and I'll go my way, and never the twain shall meet. Or, in the words of the poem, and the poet, good fences make good neighbors. Essentially, that's what's happening over there. Are all brisim like that? Such as, for example, Maimon HaSinai is also a bris. What's the function of that bris, clearly?
Marriage.
A marriage between who and whom?
One of obligation.
Hashem and call yourself, sorry?
One of obligation.
Correct, undoubtedly. Not just, shall we say, rights, but obligations. As we spoke about at one point in time, as you so beautifully articulated. But whatever the case is, you have some brisim that the object is to bring people together, and other brisim the object is to, shall we say, more or less drive a wedge between people. Or you go your way, I go my way. As I said a moment ago, please, pray tell me, what is the nature of this bris over here? Was it to bring Laban and Yaakov together? Or was it, shall we say, to drive a wedge between them, to separate them, to more or less that each one should go their own merry way? So my Rebbe said, it depends whom you ask. If you ask Laban, Laban clearly was not, shall we say, necessarily happy about separating from Yaakov Avinu. The Torah tells us already a number of times, and Chazal certainly indicate this very clearly. Laban realized that his hatzlacha came from being in the ambience of Yaakov Avinu. All of his hatzlacha, whatever prosperity he had, really was a direct result of his being in the environment of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov is the one responsible for his hatzlacha. And Laban is not exactly, if you recall earlier, when Yaakov at one point in time, what did Yaakov do? Yaakov escaped from Laban. And what did Laban do when Yaakov escaped from him? He pursued him doggedly and tenaciously. And he catches him on the third day, Kibarach Yaakov. And what does he say? This actually is a bit later. So, you're not obligated to be aware of it. But a bit later in Vayetze, which I believe is this week's Parsha, if I'm not mistaken. So there, when he catches Yaakov, he tells him, Me'asisa v'atigna v'sababi v'atanagis v'nosa kishvi al-scharev l'manach v'esa l'vrach. Why did you pull the stunt on me? And your guilt of Gnevas Das, you deceived me, you duped me, you fooled me, and had you told me, I would have sent you out with Simcha, Bashir, Betoma, Bechinor, with a 10-piece orchestra. He is Mr. Phony Baloney. And you didn't give me a chance to kiss my sons and daughters, and on and on and on. Okay, but my point is that as far as Laban is concerned, he really did not want to separate from Yaakov, because he realized his Hatzlacha came as a result of his being together with Yaakov. This is early in the Pasha of Ayetzi. Here's the end of the Pasha. However, Yaakov Avinu realizes that Laban essentially is a, take the word Laban, Laman Ben Nun, and it becomes, and he transposes the words, Naval. What does Naval mean? A scoundrel. That's what Laban is, a scoundrel. A Ramai. That's a Ramai. A thief, a cheater, a liar, an imposter, a prevaricator. Not such a nice man. Yaakov Avinu is Ish Emes, the man of truth. Ish Tam, Yoshev HaOlev. God was Shlim, says the Targum. There's no way Yaakov Avinu could continue to maintain his, shall we say, lifestyle, his value system in the context of someone like Laban, who's a novel. So Yaakov realized they have to separate. So now the Torah is describing, apparently, this separation that takes place right over here, that's what my Rebbe felt, is being alluded to by the different language of the text. So we said, the first distinction we pointed out, we only mentioned two or three. Well, the first distinction we mentioned, that what is Lavan called the place? Yigar Sa'adusa. Says the Nitziv, in Perash HaLatara, HaMekdava, the word Yigar comes from a pasuk in Mishlei. Lecha demola atzel, go to Rej Rachav HaChacham, go to the ant, you sluggard. Take a look at her methodology and become wise. What does an ant do? You ever watch an ant? No. The Medrash describes it at great length in Sefer Dvarim and also elsewhere it's found. The ant actually prepares her food. The Medrash describes actually a whole line of ants carrying each one like a microscopic kernel of grain ready for the winter hibernation. And one of them apparently dropped its kernel. All the other ants pass by, give a sniff, continue, because they're very yashristic, very straight, they won't engage any kind of gazelle. And so the ants are known to be kind of busy bees, if you will, pardon the bee expression, but they are busy bees, they're industrious, and that is the ant. So, lecho, nemola atzel, reid rachel, lachachom. It continues, the pasuk of Mishlei. Asher ogar bakayitz lachma. Ogar means to gather. So what Lavan said, yigar sadusa, let us gather the troops together. Let us, shall we say, families that pray together, stay together. Let us maintain our, shall we say, our unity. Let us maintain our togetherness. Achdus. Hinei matovu manoyim sheves achim gam yochad. What does Yaakov say? No, sir. Galei, good fences make good neighbors. You and I are not going, we don't travel the same way. Different value system, different methodology, different Belchalom, different Ashkofis. I'm MS. 1 second. And then the Torah continues. So what does Laban do? He makes a last ditch effort and he decides, okay, you know what I can do? I'll take a Shavua. But the Shavua will invoke whom? Someone who is common to both families, namely Terach. Elohei Avraham, Elohei Nochem, Yisraelim, Elohei Avim. Yaakov says, no siree, Charlie. And what does Yaakov do? He takes a Shavua in the name of his father Yitzchak, who's already, shall we say, on the other side, separate from the original, what do you want to call him, Terach, the patriarch, the original patriarch. And that's why the Meshech Chochma says, that's what my Rebbe said, Vayizbach Yaakov Zerach Bahor, Shechita Schulut, because what does Shechita do? If you ever learned Yerodea, if you did, Simen Alpha Yerodea, Big Machokis of Bishenu, what the Makar, but Shechita is, and what does Shechita do? You know, the Rambam includes Shechita, and what Sefer? The Sefer called Kedusha, Mishneh Torah. Why? Because Shechita is one of the items that separates us, demarcates us from whom? From the Umos HaOlam and the nations of the world. And so here, Yaakov Avinu is Mechadish, the idea of Shechita. He's back, Yaakov Zerach Bahor. Even Chulin, not just Kodshin, requires Shechita, but even Chulin is the din of Shechita, And that was basically what Yaakov was trying to underscore. What Yaakov was trying to say is that you and I cannot travel together. You and I have to go ahead and travel in two different venues. There's no way we can, shall we say, come together. Your ideology is not mine. Your destiny is not mine. Your theology is not mine. And that's what Yaakov Avinu here, that's what the Torah is describing at the end of the parasha. No, at the beginning of the parasha, the Torah is describing that a Jew can be confronted by many, many challenges, as we are even at Yom HaZeh. We have many, many challenges. And Rahman al-Islam, unfortunately, was surrounded by terrorism today, especially in the Middle East, but not just in the Middle East, in the United States, and all over the world. So what has been, what have we maintained our integrity, our homeostasis? The answer is, despite all the troubles, Vayetze, Vayelech, Vayivka, Vayolen, Vayishkav, is a chalom that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring about the Geula. A chalom, we're going to come back to Eretz Yisrael. A chalom, we're going to be Makim Kavanos in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. And that's also reflected at the end of the Parsha. You go your way, I go my way. And that's reflected in a number of distinctions. That's what my Rebbe suggested. He had other chilukim also. I didn't get into all the details, but I thought this was absolutely fantastic analysis of the end of the Parsha.
I feel like the end here, at least from a historical perspective, betrays the thing we said at the beginning, which is that, you know, we face all these challenges and, you know, we're in exile. Since after our history, although in an ideal sense we shouldn't have acted this way, Jews wanted to cling to, and although normally we want to come back to Eretz Yisrael, but throughout history Jews wanted to be part of the culture that they were in.
But as you recall, when we spoke about in the Parsha Chayisara, when I said over from Absalomitcha, Gev etosha v'nochi imochem. So that's the tensile balance that exists between these two. On the one hand, unquestionable, you said it's correct, to contribute, to be part of society, to be civic-minded, for sure. On the other hand, in terms of our theology, our uniqueness, our distinctiveness, there's no question that we are set apart and we are not to be, shall we say, integrated with them. There are areas that of commonality that we can't actually share. There are joint areas of partnership, but in terms of the overall Belchak that we have and they have, clearly never the twain shall meet. Okay, sorry.
Shiva.
Yeah.